Hello, it's Scott Manley here. Project Hail Mary is probably my favourite movie at the box office this year, telling the story of a space mission working against the odds to save the universe from, well, something that eats stars. But this summer, NASA is going to have its own Hail Mary, a last-minute, high-risk mission to save a spacecraft which has seen literally hundreds of stars getting eaten. Yes, in the coming month, we should see a spacecraft launched attempting to save the Neil Gehrels Swift Observatory from burning up in the atmosphere. This spacecraft was launched back in 2004, and it has been operating more or less continuously for 20 years. It was a space telescope with a unique capability, the ability to detect gamma ray bursts and rapidly slew its telescopes to point at the source to understand what was causing these fabulously energetic events across the universe. The name SWIFT isn't some acronym, it's a reference to the fact that this can turn rapidly to point its sensors at a target. It has the Burst Alert Telescope, which will detect the gamma ray burst, then it has an ultraviolet optical telescope for more regular astronomy, and it also has an X-ray telescope. Not only does it use its onboard capabilities, but the moment it sees a gamma ray burst, it can inform resources on the ground, which can immediately start follow-up as well. This can include optical telescopes or radio telescopes or even gravitational wave antenna, which have shown that gamma ray bursts are frequently correlated with gravitational wave events. And we now know for sure that these tiny flashes of gamma rays coming from across the sky are because of black holes eating stars or neutron stars merging. These objects may have orbited each other for millions of years, but they're so far away that they would be far too faint to be picked up by the telescopes. But in their final moments, as they consume each other, the energy released is so magnificently huge that it shines beyond the galaxy. It becomes the brightest thing for a brief moment. But the Swift telescope can do more than just study these brief flashes in the sky. It can operate as a regular telescope, studying more predictable objects until that moment where a gamma ray burst happens in the right place at the right time. It can store what it's been working on, slew over and collect the data, capturing what may well be a brief catastrophe in a large universe. But after 20 years of operation, the Swift telescope is now facing its own slow catastrophe. Its orbit has been decaying, as these things do. It is now getting dangerously close to returning to Earth and being destroyed, but it is still providing good data. NASA would no doubt love to build a modern replacement, but that would take a lot of money, it would take a lot of time. Last year, they came up with a different idea, a high-risk, high-reward mission, which would attempt to reboost the observatory into a higher orbit to save it from its demise. They only offered a small amount of money, about $30 million, and I was very skeptical that you could even launch a spacecraft for that amount of money, never mind launch a new spacecraft which could autonomously rendezvous, dock, and reboost this. And the spacecraft for this mission would have to be built, tested, launched, and perform its mission inside of a year. The telescope's orbit was decaying more rapidly than they'd anticipated because of higher solar activity. And this also happened when NASA didn't have a proper administrator. In August, they awarded a handful of companies a small amount of money to investigate the problem and come up with proposals. This included Cambrian Works, Astroscale, Starfish Space, and Catalyst, who would win the award in September for $30 million. This is their tiny Link spacecraft getting ready for vibration testing just last month. Catalyst had already been working with NASA, looking at rendezvous and proximity operations for spacecraft which didn't have any docking capability. They had already been working on proposals to service satellites in space. So they already had been developing the right technology at the right place at the right time. But getting them to the right place, well, that's going to require a launch vehicle. And so it's time for me to have some fun and Kerbalize this video. Yes, there we're going to launch this on the Pegasus XL. The Pegasus was the first commercial launch vehicle to get a payload into orbit years before SpaceX. They started with a bunch of more or less off-the-shelf solid rocket motors. They had a special wing built by Burt Rutan from Space Scale Composites. And they slung it underneath an aircraft. Now, initially on the first flights, they flew the Pegasus on the B-52, but they eventually found an old L-1011 TriStar. In fact, I believe this is the only TriStar that is still flying, at least in the US. And when this Pegasus flies, it will probably be the last of the Pegasus rockets. Back when it was originally developed, it was much cheaper than any of the other launch vehicles, partly because it had a lower payload capability. But of course, over the years, SpaceX, Rocket Lab have come in and they are able to do this kind of launch more cheaply than Pegasus had historically been doing it. They've burned through the remaining Pegasus hardware in their, you know, stores, and I believe this is the last one that they've got. And Catalyst Space were apparently able to negotiate a steep discount and get the last one because nobody else wants it. However, Pegasus has one very special capability that makes it ideal for this mission. The Swift telescope is in a 20 degree inclination orbit. That is about 8 degrees further south or lower inclination than is possible from Florida. This means if they were to launch on a Falcon 9, the Falcon 9 would have to perform what's called a dogleg maneuver. It would have to make a turn to flatten out the orbital inclination. If it launched on a Falcon 9, it would require a dedicated launch for that dogleg. It couldn't just ride on one of the transporter or bandwagon missions. It can't fly on Electron because Electron would need extra performance to make that dogleg. Pegasus is, however, launched from the air, so if the aircraft flies to a lower latitude, it will be able to launch this into its target orbit directly without any need for a dogleg, and that is why Pegasus is so well suited to this mission, and I think it is a fitting final mission for this pioneering launch vehicle. So the plan is that later this month, this Stargazer carrier aircraft will take the launch vehicle, the satellite, all the way down to Kwajalein Atoll, and it'll be from there that they begin the launch campaign and hopefully get the spacecraft into orbit. I say hopefully because, you know, Stargazer hasn't launched a Pegasus in 5 years, so there's always a chance that something has been forgotten. But as I understand it, the aircraft has actually continued flying. It's been a test bed for various other payloads in those intervening years, so the, you know, crew in charge of this are not lacking experience. And so the next series of miracles will all be down to Catalyst and their Lynx spacecraft. And this is the first spacecraft they've actually put into orbit, although to be fair, last year they acquired a company called Atomos Space Technologies, and they had previously flown hardware. They had the Quark Light transfer vehicle, and Gluon was their target spacecraft. So they had actually launched hardware, and they have been acquired. So there is some experience within the company. So the primary propulsion for the spacecraft on orbit is going to be a set of three Hall effect thrusters powered by the solar panels, and that will perform the majority of on-orbit maneuvers. But as they start to get close to the target, they're going to need faster pointing capability to perform the rendezvous. And I haven't seen the exact details of what's involved, but I've seen a mention that confirms they do in fact have some sort of onboard reaction control thrusters. But I don't know what, you know, form those thrusters take. I do see one image that shows like an airbed test of something with two gas cylinders, so I think they might be using cold gas thrusters, but honestly they haven't really mentioned that outside of in any public articles. I'm going to presume they've done their homework on this. I'm certainly not criticizing them, but this is going to have to perform rendezvous and proximity operations with a target which was never designed for that, so it doesn't have any onboard targets that to be recognized. It doesn't have any onboard like sensors or radar. The satellite is going to carry all that, and it's primarily going to use optical sensors with some LiDAR apparently on the arms, so we'll talk about that in a minute. So the satellite is going to have to maneuver in behind the spacecraft, and initially it will perform a close inspection pass. It will take high resolution images off the telescope to make sure that they understand where everything is. While the teams working on this project obviously have access to the designs of the Swift telescope, there might be some surprises waiting there. So obviously you have like complete designs for everything involved, that those designs were used to build the telescope, but the technicians working in the clean rooms may have had to make minor changes, things that may have seemed innocuous at the time. So the first pass will be an inspection pass where they will take high resolution images to make sure that everything is where it's supposed to be, to make sure that there isn't a wire harness that is running over one of the points where they plan to grapple it, or thermal blankets or something else that might interfere with their plans to capture the spacecraft. Obviously, this is Kerbal Space Program. I'm just using a very small docking adapter, but there is no such luxury on a space telescope. There wasn't even a shuttle manipulator anchor point because this was launched on a Delta II. It was never designed to be interacted with by another spacecraft. Now, we have seen previously in-space capture of spacecraft which were not designed for docking. And one of the ways they'll frequently do that is they will find a thruster and they will insert a probe inside the thruster and then expand it out inside the combustion chamber so that they can hold it. Now, the space telescope did not come with any propulsion, so that is not going to be an option here. But the spacecraft was designed to be launched on a rocket. There are structural load-bearing elements in the bottom which had to interface with the payload adapter, and the engineers believe they've identified a number of flanges which can be grabbed. And when I say grabbed, I mean this literally has three robot arms with tiny LiDAR sensors which can very carefully go in and grab specific parts and will hold it with sufficient force so that they can control the attitude of the combined spacecraft and ultimately reboost it. And I'm sure it goes without saying, but I'm going to say it anyway, that all this rendezvous and docking and firing of thrusters and attitude control has to be done without actually damaging the spacecraft that they're trying to save, because that would be, well, I'm sure it would be a useful technology demonstrator at some level, but it would kind of mean that the mission had failed. So there are many reasons why this is a massive risk and why this probably shouldn't work. But if it does work, this will unlock all sorts of fascinating new capabilities. Non-cooperative docking, you know, working with robot arms to manipulate spacecraft. This was a study that the Department of Defense began looking at and then stepped away from because it was taking too much time and money. And now some tiny little startup in Flagstaff, which have never actually flown a spacecraft of their own, think that they're going to give it a go. NASA says, hell yeah. I mean, again, what have we got to lose? We have everything to gain, very little to lose. Artemis 2 really got a lot of people excited about spaceflight because there were people involved. But that was a mission that took years of planning to get to the point where we were sending people to the far side of the moon to take pictures with the iPhones. This is what geeks like me get excited about. A mission that is thrown together in fabulously short timelines. There is no flexibility here. They're having to make deals, they're going for it, and I really hope it succeeds. But equally, I know the odds are against it, and if it doesn't work out, I won't be too sad. It'll be better to have tried and failed than never to have tried at all. And the fact that this mission is potentially capping the career of both the TriStar and the Pegasus rocket just adds poetry to this whole mission. Forget the summer blockbusters. For me, this is where the real excitement is at. I'm Scott Manley. Fly safe.